When they're not covering the sports world, they're talking about the world of professional wrestling. It's Sports Guys Talking Wrestling. Here's Stu Myrick.
It's Sports Guys Talking Wrestling for Wednesday, the 6th of July. Stu Myrick here in Austin, Texas, where it is hot. Of course, it's hot. It's July. It's Austin, Texas. It's going to be hot. It'll be hot until Halloween. So, but the wrestling action is getting even hotter. And to help me talk about it, we bring back our good friend Dave LaGreca from SiriusXM's Busted Open. You catch him Monday, Tuesdays, and Fridays, 2 to 4 Eastern, 1 to 3 Central on SiriusXM Rush, Channel 93. Now, Dave, before we get to the WWE draft, I got to ask you, first of all, have you gotten an extraordinary xylophone for birthday, Christmas, or has Vanguard One been visiting you, and do we need to contact NSA?
You know, Stu, I may have gotten one for my first birthday like Maxwell did, but I don't think I ever did. It's funny, Maxwell's like the new, Manuel Lewis. I mean, he's all over the TV. He's the youngest superstar in the history of pro wrestling.
He's I saw somebody joke he might be more over than Roman Reigns, but we'll see how that goes. So let's talk about Impact Wrestling first. Last night you had Hardy versus Hardy, the final deletion, and I heard that Matt Hardy had called into your show on SiriusXM, and did I hear right that he decided not only to delete his brother Nero, but decided to delete you guys as well?
Yes, he was listening to the second hour of our show, which, of course, you can get at SiriusXM On Demand if you want to catch that interview. But he heard the beginning of the second hour. He called in, and he heard me calling him crazy. So he's decided that he has now deleted myself and Doug Mortman. So, the day after WrestleMania, Chris Jericho called in and defriended us and deleted us from his Talk is Jericho podcast. And now, just, mere hours before Impact, Matt Hardy called in and deleted us. So, Stu, we're losing friends left and right. And Stu, honestly, after the first time I went on with you, I didn't hear from you in weeks. And I was like, I thought maybe you deleted me.
No.
At least from your phone, maybe.
Oh, no. We would never do that. I love having you on.
I need all the friends I could get.
Well, to quote Randy Newman, you got a friend in me. So give me your impression of this final deletion match. This was, I had seen so much buildup for this on Twitter and on social media. Mm-hmm. There were, they were showing advanced screenings to different individuals, and the reactions were just, it was puzzlement, amazement, couldn't believe what they saw on the screen. It finally aired last night on Pop TV. Let me get your reaction. The overall segment, the match itself, how they built up throughout the show with the different segments, Maxwell's birthday party, Senior Benjamin, which, by the way, I think Senior Benjamin now has more Twitter followers than most of the indie rosters here in Texas. So, give me your impression.
And Benjamin has swag now. I think you can get a TNAshop.com. I think you can get a Benjamin T-shirt, Benjamin Maintenance T-shirt.
I saw the T-shirt, available for landscaping parties and preparing battlefields for massacre or something like that.
It's amazing. That's amazing. And that's the one word listen, there's a lot of words to describe what we all watched last night. You could say bizarre and you could say crazy, but for me, it's different. And I think, especially with pro wrestling the last few years, and Stu, I think you would agree with it, like it's gotten stale. So we really needed something that was just different and something that we just never seen before. And, it kind of reminded me a little bit of kind of like those vignettes from Kevin Sullivan from Florida Championship Wrestling back in, the early to mid 80s, where it was just totally bizarre. And just, you didn't know if it was good, you didn't know if it was bad, but you had to watch it. And that's what last night was. Like, I still don't have a good grasp of what I've seen. I can't, it's hard to describe, But I think that's a good thing. I think the fact that people are watching it, I think the fact that people are tweeting and talking about it, that people, even WWE superstars, are quoting it, I think that that's a good thing for Impact. And Impact needed this, Stu. I mean, after what happened a couple of weeks ago when they were completely off the grid, when, I tried to watch an episode of Impact and I kept seeing That 70s Show promos over and over again. They needed to do something that was going to get some attention to their product that wasn't negative. And I think the Hardys accomplished that last night.
I couldn't agree with you more. Like you said, for all the negative publicity that TNA has had from the hiccup, the technical hiccup 2 weeks ago, to the financial situation, to, stars leaving and all this, it was finally something at least somewhat positive. Like you said, I'm not sure what I saw, which I guess it's to be expected, because we all know Jeff and Matt are incredibly creative minds, and especially when it comes to in-the-ring product. And for them to come up with this and to have Dixie Carter and TNA to sign off on it, and it's good to see that. How often do you think... Well, I shouldn't. I would say this. Do you think TNA will want to try to replicate this? Or, because I think this should be a one-off thing. Maybe do it down the road. And when I say down the road, we're talking, at the very soonest, October, November, do something else like this. But at least it helps to put eyes on the product, which they've been put on some pretty decent shows. They've just had these glitches.
Well, I think that's the whole idea. I agree with you. You can't do this again. And if you do, it's got to be months and months down the road. You're absolutely right. But I think that they just wanted to get eyes on the show, because I agree with you. I think the shows have been good. Since they made the move to Pop, the shows have been good, but they haven't been able to get people to actually watch. They have their hardcore audience that watches every single week, but they haven't gotten any new people to tune in. I think last night did that. And I'm really interested to see what the rating is going to be. I would be shocked if there's not an improvement, a significant improvement in the ratings, because, like, you were saying, there's such a buzz around last night. And I think that was the goal. The goal is just to get new eyes on the show. And if they can accomplish that, then I think, mission accomplished.
Couldn't agree more. We're talking with Dave LaGreca from Busted Open on SiriusXM. Rush Channel 93. One other thing about TNA before we get to the draft and to the brand split. Bobby Lashley, he's an incredible physical specimen. He's trying his hands MMA as well as wrestling. I still get the feeling that they're trying to frame him the way, into their own version of Brock Lesnar, and I still think it's not working. How long does Bobby Lashley keep this title? And, what happens afterwards? I mean, is just in your guess.
It's I really like Bobby Lashley. Like you said, he's a specimen. I think he's improved in the ring. I think he's a very good wrestler, and I think he's actually gotten better on the mic. But the timing is just bad, because you're right. You're going to look at Bobby Lashley and it's going to remind you of the WWE and Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Lashley doesn't compare to Brock Lesnar. So it's, again, the TNA being WWE light. And it's something they have to stay away from. And it's unfortunate, because I think Bobby Lashley could be a good champion. But the timing is bad when you look at what's going on now in the WWE and with Brock Lesnar. So I don't know what the answer is. Do you ignore what's going on in the WWE? Do we acknowledge it? Or do you say to yourself, like, this is another example of us trying to be like the WWE? And do you avoid Bobby Lashley for right now? It's a tough call. I like Bobby Lashley. I just think the timing right now is bad.
Well, and I would say if you want to use Bobby Lashley, let's not make him a monster heel. Let's, if you don't want to be WWE light, then make him a babyface.
Yeah.
Make him, do something like that. Just don't do this whole, badass, I can beat up anybody at any time.
You know, I think you make a really good point. Maybe that's the way to go. And it's funny because Brock Lesnar's a heel. Brock Lesnar's a heel for other reasons other than what we see on Monday Night Raw. So for me, Brock Lesnar's a heel. Like, he's a true life heel, Brock right. Lesnar. I mean, and I'm sure you've heard it on my show. I'm not happy with Brock Lesnar right now. I mean, the comments that he made, some of the things that he said, his attitude towards, you know, the WWE and the WWE fan base. I mean, we all knew when he came in that he's a guy that's just in it for the money. He doesn't have a passion for the business. He's never been a fan of the business. But I think that we all thought maybe his attitude has changed over the last couple of years because he seemed to be dedicated to the WWE. But I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, I really do think that this is a guy that's just in it for the money. And the reason that that bothers me, and maybe it shouldn't, maybe, hey, here's a guy that's credible. He's a guy that's a legit badass. The WWE needs credibility. Who cares if he's passionate about it or not? And I can understand that argument. But my problem is the fact that the WWE has handed this guy the keys. I mean, it's not just about the fact of the money he's making. It's not just the fact that this guy's on the cover of video games. It's the fact that he beat the Undertaker's undefeated streak. So for him to do that, for him to do something like that, that us fans are very passionate about, it bothers me that he's not passionate about it. I mean, am I wrong here?
I don't think you're wrong at all. And I do agree with you. It's one of those things. We, like you said, he's in it for the money. That's why he's doing this UFC 200. It's for the money. He said it on
Twitter. And the UFC 200, not to interrupt you, but yeah. let's look at the facts. The reason that the UFC is using Brock Lesnar for UFC 200 is because they need some name value for that pay-per-view. I mean, this is supposed to be their biggest pay-per-view in their history. This is a milestone pay-per-view, and they need a WWE superstar to sell this thing.
That's right.
Let's face it.
John Bones Jones is going to do it by himself.
Yes, they're not advertising Brock Lesnar as, you know, former UFC champion. They're advertising Brock Lesnar as WWE superstar. There's a reason why they're doing this. They're using the WWE, and that's what really bothers me. And Stu, it all comes down to, and let's face it, it's you and I and the love that we have for pro wrestling. And this is why things like this bother me. It bothers me is because the pro wrestling is always used as a vehicle for everything else, and it's never given the respect that it rightfully deserves. I mean, you know this with what you're doing and what you're trying to do with your show mm-hmm. and what I'm trying to do with my show.
Right.
It's difficult to do it because people look at pro wrestling and they look at it as second tier. They look at it as second rate. But yet you look at the millions that it brings in, the what WrestleMania is able to do in box office draw, and what these superstars are able to do in draw, and it's not second rate.
No, not at all. And you know, second case in point, CM Punk. You know what he has said.
He's worse.
Yeah,
he's worse.
Yeah, he's trying to throw. I mean, he had this sense of he was bigger than the business. He got bored yep. and decided he wanted to try, you know, MMA.
Yeah. And again, the reason that he's going to be on a UFC pay per view is because of his name that he was able to create in the WWE. Now, I know he had that name prior to going to WWE, but, you know, it became a household name with what he was able to do in the WWE. And he's a hypocrite. I mean, CM Punk, all he did was badmouth, you know, The Rock, because The Rock's a part-timer. He could just walk in and be in the main event at WrestleMania 29 because he's The Rock. And a guy like me that's here every single day, I get delegated down to the middle of the card because we got to make room for these part-timers. Well, what is he doing now in the UFC? He's knocking legit UFC fighters off of a pay-per-view because of his brand name that he created in the WWE. He's a bigger hypocrite than Brock Lesnar. At least Brock Lesnar's not trying to pretend to be something else different, but CM Punk is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And to discount, you know, for all of, you know, whatever discord or whatever he has with Triple H or Stephanie or Vince, what WWE did for him as far as a brand and as far as a superstar, that's the reason he's got this slot in UFC. Because yep. otherwise, if he's still and I love Ring of Honor to death, but if he's still in Ring of Honor, he doesn't get this shot. If he's still doing TNA, he's not getting this shot.
Nope.
Yeah.
Hey, look at you mentioned Bobby Lashley before. There's a reason why Bobby Lashley was fighting for Bellator and not for UFC.
Exactly. Absolutely right. We're talking with Dave LaGreca, SiriusXM, Busted Open. Let's talk about this brand split. Now, the last time WWE did a brand split, it started in 02, shortly after the acquisition of WCW and ECW, and it went along for a few years, did okay. They had the two dual champions and everything. Then about 06, they decided to bring back ECW, and then you started seeing Raw superstars on SmackDown and SmackDown superstars on ECW, and then before you know it, just got diluted. And that's the fear I have with this brand split. I know what they want to do, and I applaud them for it, trying to create separate brands and everything. But is it going to be another one of those things they get 3-4 years down the road and realize this is getting stale, we need to put it back together?
Yeah, I mean, here's the danger with this brand split. And listen, I'm excited about the brand split. I think it's created a buzz. There's some juice around the WWE right now at a time when usually it's kind of dead. And I'm very excited for what we're about to see. But you're right. I mean, I think they're doing it for the wrong reasons. And why I say that is because you know why they're doing this. USA is not happy with the SmackDown ratings. They need something different. SmackDown's going live, and if they really want people to tune into SmackDown, they have to, you know, change the foundation of the WWE. That's the reason why they're doing this. They're doing this, I think, to please USA and to boost the ratings for SmackDown. I don't think they're doing it for creative reasons. I don't think they're doing it because they're trying to create competition. I think they're doing it strictly based on the fact that probably USA is upset with the current structure of Raw and SmackDown. They want juice, they want a buzz, and this is a way to create it. So I think your fears are justified, Stu, because I really do think that there is a danger of 2, 3, 4 years down the road that they're going to be looking at themselves saying that they made a mistake by splitting the brands and by splitting the roster.
Well, and heaven forbid, if they get into a bind like they did right before WrestleMania, where they get a slew of superstars on the injured shelf, you know, all of a sudden you've got one brand or the other now doesn't have enough people to compete.
Yeah.
And I get as far as I can see where it could be better quality because now you have two separate writing teams, two separate sets of storylines. So in other words, you don't have to carry a storyline from Raw to SmackDown, back to Raw, back to SmackDown. You can worry about just the 3 hours of Raw every week or the 2 hours of SmackDown every week and not worry about having to carry it over. I get that, and that it makes sense. I just don't know if they have the horses, and even if they bring in independent talent with, you know, such as, say, a Roderick Strong, or they've got Cedric Alexander from Ring of Honor that's going to be in the Cruiserweight Classic. You know, they're probably going to keep some of the guys that are in the Cruiserweight Classic. You know, of course, they'll have to replenish NXT because they're going to bring some of those guys up. I get that, and on the surface, and I think initially, at least for the next 6 months, maybe even go to next year's WrestleMania, I think it'll be good. I have a feeling that I would say even next summer, you're going to start to see little cracks. Am I too pessimistic about that?
No, I think, like I said, I think your fears are justified. I'm gonna bring something up to you, Stu, and we had a brief conversation about this the last time I was on.
Right.
But, you know, my favorite wrestling growing up was near your neck of the woods, and that was World Class Championship Wrestling. Like, that was my favorite show when I was growing up, and that's really how I became a hardcore pro wrestling fan, was watching that show every single week.
Right. And that's why we're friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Among other things.
And that's also why this past WrestleMania was so special to me. But Stu, a lot of the complaints about Impact Wrestling, oh, they're in the same venue every week in front of the same fan. Well, World Class Championship Wrestling every week was at the Sportatorium. It was
Absolutely.
In the same venue every week. You know, here you and I are talking about, are the rosters too small? They're going to split these rosters, and do they have enough horses? Do they have enough talent? I mean, how many wrestlers was really on that roster on World Class Championship Wrestling? You pretty much saw the same matches week in and week out. You knew you were going to see David Von Erich. You knew you were going to see Kevin Von Erich. And you knew you were going to see Kerry Von Erich. And somehow, someway, they're either going to be in single matches with the Freebirds, six-man tag matches with the Freebirds, or tag matches with the Freebirds. But you know what? Did it hurt the show? Did it make you not want to watch?
No.
You know, were you not completely invested? My point is, Stu, at the end of the day, you need to have a good show.
Right.
So you may have a limit. You may have a limited roster. You may be in front of a hot crowd or a crowd that's dead. What cures everything is how good the show is. And I think the one shining star in this whole thing, where I think it may work out, is that it may not be competition, so to speak, but maybe we have it where, you know what? We love SmackDown because creatively SmackDown's doing it right. Or you know what? Because of this brand split, Raw is doing something right. I think that's the one glimmer of hope we have, maybe 2-3 years down the road, is that we're looking at this as like, you know what? You know, maybe creatively, at least one of these shows is getting it right.
Well, and that's true. Now, to be fair, World Class only did 1 hour a week. You know, for the Sprouted Tome show, they had the 2 hours every Saturday night in Fort Worth. That was available in the North Texas, East Texas area. Mark Lawrence did that one, but you know, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. One hour a week. It wasn't 3 hours a week plus the pay per views plus throw in a live special on the network every now and again, and I think they've got the roster now. What I'm afraid of is where, you go into this stretch where you get especially your top stars injured, just like we had leading up to WrestleMania, and all of a sudden you're having to scramble a little bit. All of a sudden you're having to call in Shane McMahon to come out from building Chinese TV networks to go jump off Hell in a Cell. That's my fear. I think they've got the roster as is. Add a few more guys, and that's fine. I'm looking at, down the road, Randy Orton hurts his shoulder again, or John Cena decides he's done with wrestling, wants to follow The Rock onto the screen. That's the thing I'm thinking about. My other problem, and we noticed this starting, I think, last week on Raw. You started hearing them refer to the world title as the WWE Championship, which, of course, has everybody believing they're going to bring back a second title. My contention is, and again, this this probably flies in the face of the general theory of Vince McMahon et al. My theory is one company, one champion. You should have a world champion. TNA has a world champion. Ring of Honor has a world champion. New Japan has a world champion. One company, one champion. Take the Intercontinental Championship and the U.S. Championship. Get those elevated. And everybody says they don't mean anything. They can. They tried to do it with John Cena and Daniel Bryan. And if Daniel Bryan doesn't get hurt, who knows where it went? Use those as your signature titles. Am I wrong in thinking that if they bring back a second title and make one for Raw and one for SmackDown, no matter what, the WWE Championship is still going to be your top championship?
Stu, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not gonna say I disagree, but I think what they're thinking of is that you have the two titles. You have one title on Raw, you have one title on SmackDown, and they're really going to look at these two shows as completely separate. I mean, I really do think that in order for this to work, they have to look at it as two completely separate entities. And right. I think they're gonna try to do that. Because here, if you have just the one world title, and I understand what you're saying, and you know what? I agreed with you, especially when they unified it. I thought at the time, like when they unified it at WrestleMania 30, that it was something that needed to be done. But right now, I think they need the two titles because they need it to justify SmackDown. Mm-hmm. They need it for that. You know what? Raw is no longer the A show, and SmackDown's the B show. They're both A shows. Like, both Raw and SmackDown are must watch. They're both live. And they're both two shows that you have to watch, because if there's just the one world title, you know you're going to see that only on Raw. And then you, right away, they're telling you that Raw is the A show and SmackDown's the B show. They can't do that. They're going to, they want you to watch both shows. They want you to say to yourself that they're both must see shows. And I think the only way they can do that is by having, you know, two titles, one on Raw, one on SmackDown.
And we're talking with Dave LaGreca from Busted Open on SiriusXM. And I agree with you. If they get SmackDown to the point where it becomes on the same level as Raw, to where you do have to tune in to Raw and SmackDown every week, and it's live, and they both have compelling stories, then that's fine. And separate brands. I mean, if it wasn't so, if it wasn't 2016 and the brands weren't so soiled, I'd almost say just call one of them WCW, and let's truly make it two separate brands. Don't just call it Raw and SmackDown, because those are two WWE brands. Let's use an old, you know, WCW or AWA, or use something. Bring back some sort of a, you know, acronym or some sort of title to where it doesn't look like it's just two shows from the same company.
Yeah, I could see that too, but I think that they want to put their own branding on it, and I think they want to look to the future. Like I think the WWE right now, they got to stop looking back, and they got to stop looking at the past. They really got to find a way to forge forward and really start to attract to a younger audience. Because I think the WWE's problem right now is, you know, I'm turning 45 this month. Like, I think the average wrestling fan right now is more my age than my daughter's age. Like, I think that the average wrestling fan is over the age of 40. And if you want to be a successful company, that can't be. You got to start getting younger people to watch your product. So I don't think the best thing is to use like WCW or AWA or NWA. So, Stu, if they did that, I'd be in my glory. I wouldn't complain about it. But I'm just saying, what's best for business is for them, you know, to look ahead and not behind. And
then that would explain why Bruce Tharp was at the Performance Center a month or so ago too.
Yes. And I think there's a way to do it. And Stu, like, I think really, and Doug and I have talked about this a lot on Busted Open, and what the WWE is doing right now is, all right, you don't like Raw? Well, now we're going to give you SmackDown. Oh, you don't like SmackDown? Well, here's NXT. Oh, you don't like NXT? Well, here's our vaulted material on the network. What the WWE is trying to tell you that they're everything. You don't need to watch New Japan. Guess what? You're a fan of New Japan? We have Nakamura now. You know, we have, you know, Anderson and Gallows and AJ Styles. You know, you're still seeing those guys wrestling on Access TV on New Japan. And now they're part of the WWE. Oh, you're an indie wrestling fan? Well, they're having the Cruiserweight Classic on the network. You know, I really think the WWE is they're sending out a clear message. You don't have to watch everything, but there's going to be something. As a wrestling fan, there's going to be something for you to watch. And I think that's good for them, but I think it's bad for everything outside the WWE.
You know, and I will say this, like you said, I will give WWE credit that they have started to acknowledge that there is a wrestling product that doesn't have the WWE brand on it. Like you said, we've seen, you know, from AJ Styles and Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, Shinsuke Nakamura, they've acknowledged on air Ring of Honor and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and New Japan. You know, they've done and they've mentioned everything short of actually saying the letters TNA on air. But let me ask you this.
Really quick, Stu, and it shocked me. But on the Stone Cold podcast that was on the network, to sit down with AJ Styles, they talked about, not only did they talk about TNA, they talked about Dixie Carter.
They did.
So,
and that was about, what, a third?
That shocked me. I didn't think they would do that, but they actually had like a 5 to 6 minute discussion about TNA and Dixie Carter on the WWE network.
You're right.
So to back up your point, they're acknowledging everything outside the WWE right now.
You're absolutely right. And that was it was really fascinating to hear AJ Styles talk about not only his time in TNA, but the process, you know, that whole episode right before he signed with WWE, with, you know, the talk about, you know, they had an offer on the table, but it wasn't signed or whatever. You know, it was really neat to hear about that. How much of this is Triple H's influence on the business? Because, you know, he is such a historian of the business, and he's so intrigued by, you know, what's happening, say, in Evolve. He's got this working relationship with Gabe Sapolsky over Evolve, and he's got, you know, he's regularly visiting, you know, other promotions and such. How much of this is Triple H versus, you know, Triple H convincing Vince that this is what's best for business, to use his phrase?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two. I think maybe sometimes we give Triple H a little too much credit, and we probably, you know, blame Vince McMahon a little too much. I think right now, Stu, the wrestling fan is the wrestling fan, meaning that I don't really know how much of the mainstream audience they're attracting. So I think the WWE is very, very aware of the fact that, yes, they want to bring new fans, they want to get mainstream attention, but at the same time, they know what the pro wrestling fan wants to see, and this is what they want to see. And if their programming is going to survive, and if this network is going to survive, they're going to have to start catering to the hardcore wrestling fan. I mean, they can't lose that fan base, and I think the last couple of years, that foundation that they had with the hardcore fan base was starting to crack. So I think both Triple H and Vince McMahon understand the fact that they can't lose that foundation. Now, they're always going to try to get the mainstream attention. You're always going to see a lot of the silliness and things that you see on Raw. But they're going to have to start delivering in other ways. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of wrestlers from New Japan, a lot of wrestlers from ROH. Why you have NXT and why you're having this Cruiserweight Classic. I really think they're starting to understand that they're going to have to start making the hardcore wrestling fan happy.
Talking with Dave LaGreca from SiriusXM's Busted Open. You can follow him on Twitter at Busted Open Radio. So let's go to the draft. Draft is in less than 2 weeks. Which guys do we figure are going to be the top stars on each brand? My theory is, you're going to want to hit big with SmackDown. So John Cena is going to become SmackDown. Roman Reigns, when he comes back off his suspension, he'll go to Raw. How far off am I? And who else could we see as maybe like top five on each brand coming out of the draft?
I don't think you're far off at all. I think you're absolutely right. I think Roman Reigns is going to be Raw and John Cena is going to be SmackDown. And I think the reason that they're doing it is that they realize and they know that John Cena is still the face of the franchise. And if they're going to get some attention to SmackDown, they're going to have to put Cena on SmackDown. And I think AJ Styles is probably going to go to SmackDown. I think Ambrose and Rollins will be on Raw. And I really think that those three will be the cornerstone of Raw. And AJ and Cena, along with Gallows and Anderson, will be on SmackDown.
So you don't. I was going to say, you don't think they're going to split up the club or split up the three former members of the Shield?
No, I could be totally off on this, but I think for now, they're going to try to keep those guys together. And you know, because they're, you know, is the club going to look the same come the draft? It may look different. You know, it may be very different looking, but they got to keep that core together, in my opinion. Then you can have some fun, because then when you start diving into Kevin Owens and you start, you know, diving into even like a Chris Jericho, I mean, that's when you could really start having fun and really start thinking of different matchups. And again, too, Stu, is who's going to be called up from NXT, and do they want to call anybody up from NXT right now? Because NXT is strong, and that's a network show where they still need to think about, all right, yes, we need ratings for Raw and SmackDown, but we need subscribers to the network. It's really interesting what's going to happen on the 19th of July.
Well, my contention is they had the the big match that will be coming up on NXT with Finn Balor and Nakamura. And spoiler alert, for hopefully you haven't, you know, if you don't want to hear the results, turn it off for about 10-15 seconds. But Nakamura apparently goes over, and Finn Balor, when they did the taping, treated it as if that was his last match in NXT. I've thought that, you know, the brand split, and then you have Battleground the weekend after the brand split is the perfect opportunity to introduce Finn Balor to Raw or SmackDown, and possibly, as you say, bring a new look to the club, so to speak. How far could that happen, and could we see Nakamura come up for that matter? Because you know he's ready. I know there's been some concerns with, say, possible language barrier, although he sounds okay to me. Could we see either of those two, both of those two, neither of those two, move up to Raw or SmackDown?
I mean, here's the concern, though, Stu. If you bring up Balor and you bring up Nakamura, what's left for NXT? I mean, NXT needs to still be desirable and something that people are going to tune into on the network. I mean, they're going to be at Barclays, you know, the weekend of SummerSlam, you know, hoping to sell 15,000 tickets. I mean, they got to pump their brakes a little bit when they want to start moving people over to that main roster, and it's going to be real. There's question marks, and I think that's a good thing that there's question marks too, because it's going to keep us guessing. I think there's the obvious things, like you said. I think Reigns is going to Raw, and Cena's going to SmackDown, and like you said, that, you know, we'll probably see, you know, Ambrose and Rollins on Raw too, possibly. But there's a lot of questions. I think that's great. I think it's good that we don't know. I think that's what the WWE right now needs right now, is that they need questions. They what are we going to get after the 19th? What is the landscape of Raw going to look like? What is SmackDown going to look like? Are we going to have two titles? Are there going to be two separate world champions? Is NXT going to be able to survive? You know, is NXT going to be involved in this brand split? Are they going to be possibly involved in this draft? I think there's a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to, and I think that's awesome.
I agree. I mean, there's, you know, it's good to have some intrigue. You got to have a reason to watch. You've got those that want to read spoilers and everything, and yeah, we read spoilers because there's, you know, the possibility of, you know, maybe someone gets injured or something like that. But at the same time, to see it develop on screen as it happens, yeah, that's a good thing. We, you know, like you said, go back to the World Class and Mid-South days. We didn't have access to spoilers back then, and we know those guys taped a month and a half worth of shows, usually in one night. That's okay, because you got to see it play out on TV, and it was wonderful. Before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about the Cruiserweight Classic. They're doing bracketology tonight. 32 of the best cruiserweights from around the world. I think, you know, a lot of people are betting on either Zack Sabre Jr. or maybe Johnny Gargano or Tommaso Ciampa. Give us your impression. Is there a dark horse that you could see that could possibly shine during this, you know, tournament that will culminate in September?
It's funny, Stu, as you're talking about this, I'm getting excited. I this is so exciting to me. And even though we've seen these guys, you know, on the indie scene, to see them in this light, and to see them all together, and like you're bringing up brackets, and you know the way you're breaking it down, and dark horses and stuff. This is awesome, because it brings credibility, doesn't it? I mean, this brings credibility. It brings credibility. It brings competition. I mean, these are two words that, you know, when we talk pro wrestling, we don't really throw around too much.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I half expect to see Joe Lenardi from ESPN show up just to try to break down this bracket, because he's got about, what, 8 months before the NCAA, you know, Final Four hits us. So yeah, he's got to have something to do.
And this is just like, and you know, like you throw out a name like a Zack Sabre Jr. And Ciampa and some great names, and everybody's got their favorite. There's no doubt. But you know, it's funny, you know, Stu, when I think about this, this is another one of those big question marks, because you look at the talent, and knowing this talent from the indie scene, you probably have your favorites. But you got to look at this different. Yeah, you got to look at it different, like in the eyes of the, you know, it's always a, like, what about what? How does the WWE see these guys? So that's the way you kind of got to look at it. You kind of got to throw out everything you've seen from these guys in the past, and kind of look at it. You know, who kind of fits in this era or this new era of the WWE? And when you look at it in that respect, I think who you think is your favorite, it might change if you kind of start looking it into the philosophy of, you know, in the eyes of the WWE.
I couldn't agree more. You know, it's intriguing that they bring back guys like Brian Kendrick and Tajiri into this tournament.
And you know what? I like that you said Kendrick, because if I had to pick, like, if I had to pick somebody, if I had to pick a dark horse, it would be Brian Kendrick.
That's a plausible pick. I would not be surprised. And like you said, you know, talents that we've seen on the indie scene, there's one, Kenneth Johnson. We know him incredibly well down here in Austin, San Antonio, as Wheezy Woo. He's a regular down here on the independent scene, of course. So, of course, we're all rooting for him to make a good showing there. And we're just proud of him to be there. I mean, we just had him in Buda, just south of Austin, at a show right before this got announced. So it was really cool to see him get announced and see him, you know, be on that big stage of his. But like you said, it's going to be a fun tournament to watch and to follow. Get to learn about some guys that maybe we haven't seen that you know, maybe work in other areas of the country or even other areas of the world. And like you said, the intrigue is enough just to be able to sit down each week and watch each of these matches and just see these guys put on the best possible effort they can and show the world what this group of 32 can do inside that squared circle.
And how good is it who's commentating this as well?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you couldn't get two better commentators. Yeah, it's really, I mean, the WWE's done this right. As much as we like to, you know, bitch and complain about the WWE, and believe me, you can ask my wife the things that I say at the TV when I'm watching Monday Night Raw. This is going to be really exciting how this plays out.
I couldn't agree more. You know what? Yeah, we've got to connect a little more often now, Dave. It's so good to hear you. So good to talk to you. You're a great guy. I get to tune in every now and again to y'all show, and you and Doug do such an awesome job. I hope one day to reach your lofty status, and maybe one of these days we can trade extraordinary xylophones in person. How about that?
You know what? Like, the next time you're in my neck of the woods in, you know, New York, New Jersey, you know, we'll have to exchange gifts.
You know what? And the same thing goes, if you find yourself down in the heart of Texas, I think we can make that happen. Dave LaGreca,
I love it.
Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays on Sirius XM Rush, Channel 93. It's Busted Open with his great partner, Doug Mortman. Follow him on Twitter at Busted Open Radio. Dave, thank you so much. Good to talk to you. All the best to you and Doug and everybody at Busted Open. And all the best, and we will see you down the road.
All right. Thanks, Stu. I appreciate it, man.
As we continue on Sports Guys Talking Wrestling, of course, one of our, you know, favorite things to talk about is Ring of Honor. They have such a great product. You see it in Austin. See it every Saturday night, 11:05 on KITV. Shout out to Bob Ballou, Aunt Geronimo, and the sports guys over there at KI, and the departing Adam Winkler, who's heading to Virginia. And joining me on the phone right now is one of the men that helped bring you what's happening in Ring of Honor. It's Ian Riccoboni. He handles all the backstage interviews, does a fantastic job, also does the play-by-play for Women of Honor. He got pulled into the commentary role during the Best in the World pay-per-view with the Fight Without Honor with B.J. Whitmer and Steve Corino. First of all, Ian, how's it going? And where are we talking to you from?
Yeah, so I'm right outside of Philadelphia, and thanks, Stu, for having me. You know, it's I'm right outside of Philly in the suburbs here in Glenside. I'm originally from Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is a town for, among other things, is known by the Billy Joel song. So.
Yes, absolutely. Well, in fact, the one half of our morning show, Bucky Godbolt, is from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So,
sister city.
He'll be proud to know I talked to a fellow Penner there. Before we get started, I know you also do a lot. You do some work. I know you follow the Phillies a lot, as does one of your cohorts there, Steve Corino. Are they above 500 yet?
You know, they were doing so well. They started the season, I think at one point there were 6 or 7 games above 500, and they hit a rough patch. The Cinderella's carriage turned back into a pumpkin. Although I will say this, as we're recording this, they were up 5-0. They had 4 home runs tonight. If they win tonight, that'll be 6 out of 7. So things seem to be turning back around, and it always helps this year to play the Braves, who have just been the punching bag for the National League. So.
You're absolutely right. The Braves have been they've been terrible, and it's sad to say, because of, you know, all those years they were on top of the National League for so long, and it's, I mean, we're on the other end because we're affiliate for the Texas Rangers. In fact, the Round Rock Express, which is also on our station, they're the AAA affiliate, and the Rangers, they've been on top for so long, and now all of a sudden they've hit this skid. They've lost like 5 of the last 7. They got just blitzed by the Red Sox over the weekend. I think the Red Sox put up 21 on them. I kept looking for Tom Brady to see if maybe he joined in on the pitching staff or something. But we're hoping the Rangers kind of get back in the right groove. You know, of course, we got the Astros just south of us, and they're trying to turn it around. They've got some talent. It's one of those things that's a young team, and I think they've got the setup for the future. It's just a matter of getting through this year of trying to figure out what that setup's going to look like. But you got guys like George Springer and Jose Altuve, who's probably going to be an all-star starter from the Astros, which is more to, you know, that says better about them than the Rangers, who may not have a starter anywhere in the lineup. So it's baseball, and of course, here in Austin, Texas, all that means is we're still 2 months away from, you know, the start of college football. So,
you know, right.
Yes, well, we know where our bread's buttered, in other words.
Well, as a Phillies fan, I really like the Rangers and the Astros because, you know, we were on the receiving end of some good deals with some good young players. I mean, I know Cole Hamels has been phenomenal, you know, for the Rangers this year, but we got quite a haul in return up here in Philly. You know, we got Jared Eichhoff, who's done very, very well as a starting pitcher. We had Alec Asher in that deal, who's kind of a throw in that starting to have a real good season in the minor leagues. Jorge Alfaro, who's made the Double-A All-Star team this year. Nick Williams, who's, you know, among the top outfield prospects in baseball. So I like you guys down in Texas. Well, and then
we're glad we can help. You know.
Yeah, you didn't get, you know, you did pretty well for yourself there with Hamels. I think he's 9-2.
That's true. But, if they can just get a few of those pitchers back off the DL, I think the Rangers will be okay. I mean, it's, you know, between him and Derek Holland and Yu Darvish, get a couple of, just two of those back and active. And I think the Rangers will be okay. I mean, they'll still contend, I think. So, but yeah. Getting away from the diamond and getting back into the squared circle. So I want to go back to Best in the World. I watched that pay-per-view, and it was really good to hear you alongside Kevin Kelly calling the fight without honor. And I read your piece that you wrote on ROHWrestling.com about that experience. But for the listeners, I want to just take you back there. You had talked about it was, you know, it was one thing to be witness to that match in person, and we knew it was going to be violent. I was lucky enough to talk to Steve Corino a few weeks prior, and even you could hear the beginning of that, you know, that persona that he is so well known for, going all the way back to when he was in ECW. But to talk about being in person at ringside for that match, as blood as it was, And at the same time, something you pointed out, and I want you to expand on this, how you felt like you needed to stabilize Kevin Kelly, the voice of Ring of Honor, because he is so personally invested in Steve Corino. They're very close friends and everything, to watch Kevin watch this. Talk for a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, it was definitely, so it was a career highlight, but in a lot of ways it might have been the scariest thing I've ever done. I remember, you know, I'd been told earlier in the evening that Nigel McGuinness, who was the color commentator for the evening, did not want to call the match and could not. You know, he made it an unsanctioned fight without honor. He, you know, for various reasons, did not want to call the match. And I remember walking down the hall and getting pulled aside and, you know, and being told, you know, hey, you're doing this. And I didn't really have a choice. You know, you're always looking for an opportunity. You're always looking for, you know, a way to get better. And the way I've gotten better is to work with guys like Kevin and Nigel and Steve Corino, because I'm still relatively new to professional wrestling announcing. So I'd come up through the Monster Factory, and, you know, at the Monster Factory, it's pretty standard wrestling. We had really great wrestlers there, a lot of which you've seen recently on ROH Wrestling. If you're an avid fan, you may have seen in the Top Prospect Tournament. You know, we've seen folks in NXT come up from the Monster Factory recently as well. So, you know, I'm used to pretty standard wrestling, not a lot of violence, not a lot of no disqualification matches, you know, pretty standard technical wrestling. And that's not what we saw in Concord. I remember before I went out through the curtain, I felt like almost like my lungs collapsed. I was so nervous and kind of apprehensive. It felt like I couldn't breathe, and I had to remind myself, breathe, breathe, breathe. And, you know, I had to actually tell myself that. And as I saw Nigel kind of step away from the desk on the production monitor, I knew that I had to go out and I had to take my seat. And Kevin and Steve have become such good friends, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, it may even be 6 by now, that, you know, Kevin, I've called events with Kevin, and he's usually the guy that stabilizes me, reminds me to breathe, reminds me to slow down, reminds me, you know, of different things that we have to hit throughout the broadcast. But I found myself not only looking at the monitor of the match, but also watching Kevin and remembering that someone had to call the match and someone had to steer the ship, and that, you know, I was there as much for Kevin as I was for the folks at home, because, you know, he'd been so invested in it with Steve. And for me, you know, it was a little odd, because, you know, I have traveled and roomed with both BJ Whitmer and Steve Corino. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've only known them for about 2 years apiece, but, you know, being friendly with both men, it was really tough to see the violence and the bloodshed and just the lengths to which both the guys went to not only end the match, but really potentially end, you know, one another's careers. But, you know, it was definitely a professional highlight to be able to be on pay-per-view for the first time in the play-by-play role. And, you know, it's always a thrill to work with Kevin, but wow, that was something I'd never seen before, never called before. And it even really exceeded kind of the violence I was expecting.
We're talking with Ian Riccoboni from Ring of Honor Television. Let's talk for a second before we go further. You mentioned, you know, you've been a wrestling announcer for just a few years. How did that come about?
Yeah, the professional wrestling announcing, I kind of took a weird kind of circular path to it. You know, there's that graphic that goes around that, you know, it's that graphic of the straight line, and it says what success looks like, and it's a straight line from point A to point B. And then it, right next to it says what success really is, and it's this big loopy kind of line that goes all over the place from point A to point B. And that's kind of what it was for me. You know, I had grown up in Allentown, which, you know, was the home of the Wild Samoans training school for so long. You know, Allentown's also where the WWF filmed a lot of their television at the time. They filmed in Allentown and Hamburg. So, you know, wrestling was always something that was around, and always in the area. And I grew up a huge wrestling fan. We would see wrestling at Stabler Arena in Bethlehem and at Lehigh University, and then we'd see it at Ag Hall at the Allentown Fairgrounds. So it was always around. It was always on TV. You know, growing up in Allentown, we'd get the TV channels from Allentown, New York, and Philly. So we'd get all the shows. We'd get everything, WWF, NWA, so on and so forth, even AWA, you know, when I was really young. And so I would try and watch everything. But I ended up going to school for broadcasting and for media and communications. And, you know, I had a couple early gigs. I did an MTV special. I was a singer-songwriter for a bit. So I did an MTVU Best Music on Campus competition where I was a quarter finalist and had my own commercial, which was kind of interesting. And, but everything ended up being tied back to wrestling. So when I got out of school, there was a public access show that my buddy started, you know, and I was trying to kind of establish, you know, a quote unquote career. And, he said, "Hey, why don't you come do this?" So I did that. I was part of his house band on the show. I played bass guitar. You know, we had Samu, the Wild Samoan on, or Samu, the head shrinker rather, to talk about the Wild Samoan school. Talked to him, got interested in a little bit. I actually met Adam Cole, which Adam actually remembers this. About, it was over 6 years ago now. We met filming Hump Night with Chris Freed. That's what it was called. And okay. It was a public access show. And we actually met, but we didn't, you know, didn't think anything of it. And then 4 years later, we'd see each other again. But yeah, from there, I made some connections at the channel that aired us. We started a Phillies TV show through the website I wrote through, PhilliesNation.com. From there, that got picked up by Comcast Sportsnet in Philadelphia. And I had gained some confidence and became a little bit of a better kind of broadcaster, presenter, and interviewer. And I invited Blue Meanie on the show, you know, former WWE, ECW star Blue Meanie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because my beat was to interview famous Phillies fans. So who better than to, you know, interview South Philly's own, still lives in South Philly, Blue Meanie.
Right.
And he took me to the Monster Factory in Paulsboro, New Jersey, because he said, "Hey, wouldn't it be cool if we shot this with a wrestling ring in the background, you know, for a setting?" And I absolutely. So we went there, we filmed it. I met Danny Cage, who took over the Monster Factory from Larry Sharp, and we hit it off pretty well. And you know, at one point I said, "Hey Dan, what, you know, if somebody was to want to become an interviewer or a commentator for wrestling, you know, what would they do? Like, if my friend wanted to do it," but I didn't have a friend. The friend was me. So I was asking him all these questions, you know, trying to get some information. He said, and he finally said, "Listen, if your friend wants to do it, tell your friend to show up at the next show, bring a suit, and see what happens." So I started to show up at the events in a suit. We started to do some interviews for our YouTube page. We started to do little things here and there. About 6 months in, Kevin Kelly came to the Monster Factory to do kind of a seminar, like a promo seminar, to talk about interviewing and things like that. And, you know, I had originally been referred to Kevin by Brutal Bob Evans, who I'd met a little earlier. And he said, "You know, I think you and a guy named Kevin Kelly would get along." And, you know, I didn't put two and two together. This was, you know, the Kevin Kelly. So, because there have been multiple, as yes, ardent wrestling fans would know. So, you know, I ended up doing the seminar with Kevin, and, you know, we're midway through and he's talking about the art of, you know, delivering your core message and your elevator speech and selling tickets. And we get through all the wrestlers and he says, "Guy in the suit, why don't you stand up and sell me some tickets? You got 60 seconds. So I stood up and went through the night's card that night for the Monster Factory. I did my best, you know, Killer Ken Resnick or Mean Gene Okerlund, and just ran through the night's events. And I did okay. You know, if I look back now, I'd probably find faults in it. But, you know, it felt good coming out of my mouth. And, you know, after that, Kevin said, "Hey, why don't you start coming around Ring of Honor?" He's like, "I can't guarantee anything, you know, but why don't you just start showing your face? eventually we're going to need somebody to do interviews, to do, you know, secondary commentary. Just start coming around, showing your face, and we'll try and work you in a little bit. So fast forward maybe 9 months from then, I did my first commentary, first play-by-play, was in Nashville, Tennessee, January 2015. And it was my dear, close, personal friend, Cheeseburger, defeating Chris LaRusso.
Wow, who's, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, that kind of started the ball rolling. And then suddenly, you know, almost 1 year ago today, we're in Baltimore, and they say, well, we're going to do this Women of Honor thing. Ian, we'd like you to be the play-by-play guy. And, you know, Ring of Honor has a history, you know, an illustrious history with Women of Honor, you know, everybody from Awesome Kong to Mischief to Daisy Hayes, you know, so on and so forth. And so I was very excited by the opportunity. It started off with Mandy Leon versus Deonna Purrazzo. And, you know, now, you know, it's been such a thrill. These Women of Honor matches are now literally the most watched matches on Ring of Honor's YouTube. It's kind of incredible. And, you know, it's we've built kind of a movement here, and I'm very, very proud to be a part of it.
And as well, you should be talking with Ian Riccaboni from Ring of Honor because, yeah, you've got some incredible women wrestlers there. You mentioned, of course, Mandy Leon. You've got Veda Scott. You've got Amber Gallows. You know, just an array of talent. We saw, in fact, we saw a match from just a couple weeks ago. It was Taylor Hendricks and Jessica James, which is a Jessica is a talent we see quite often here in the Austin area, between the different promotions that are here in the, you know, Austin and Central Texas. So and just a great product there. I got to see it. Attended my first Ring of Honor show during WrestleMania weekend. I was there for night one of Supercard of Honor and saw some great women's action there. And so, you know, kudos to you and the array of talent. Let's get back to the Fight Without Honor. So, and I remember Nigel when he first announced this match on TV, it was with some sort of a surrender, as in he didn't want to make this match. He had you could tell it was troubling him, but that he knew that in order to get this over with, he had to make this match. And like you said, he didn't want to be on commentary. He didn't want any part to do with the match. And you and Kevin, I think, did a fantastic job. You told the story. You let the action speak for itself. Tell me, what was it like when the lights came back up and there in the middle of the ring is the legendary Taskmaster himself, Kevin Sullivan?
Wow. It gave me chills. You know, Kevin, you know, growing up, Kevin Sullivan was always a guy that was always at the forefront of evil. You know, he was always the foe to whichever, you know, hero I was cheering on, whether it be, you know, I'm a little too young to have seen Dusty Rhodes and Kevin, you know, while it was happening, but, you know, I certainly remember when he was tormenting Cactus Jack in WCW, you know, when he later, you know, was on Hulk Hogan's case, and then, you know, his battles against the Horsemen later on. I didn't think I'd ever be able to be a part of it. Now, you know, seeing what he did, that kind of affected me in a negative way. You know, I was hoping that, you know, he'd be the one to kind of stop the match and kind of convince both men that it would be okay to just walk away. Now, why I thought that, I don't know, but, you know, to see, you know, a legendary figure just emerge, that was something else. And, you know, I got comments on, you know, Twitter. It's interesting, as, you know, as I've been starting to call more of these matches and, you know, I had the opportunity on pay-per-view, folks start to get to know me. And on Twitter, I had somebody say, wow, you know, you really, you know, were amazing with your speechlessness. That wasn't a put on, you know, from that moment when the lights came back on and Kevin Sullivan was there and just the carnage that was in the ring and, you know, just seeing BJ just soaked in blood and Steve struggling to get back to his feet and to see Kevin's exasperation, I didn't know what to say. And I don't know if that, you know, I don't know if that was necessarily because, you know, I hadn't been in a situation like that before, or if that's how, you know, any normal person would react, because I know, you know, I know Kevin was thinking about Jordan Carino and Beck Carino and then Colby Carino watching at home. You know, I had kind of equal concern for both because I've traveled with both, I've eaten for both and eaten with both. And, you know, that was just something that, that caught me off guard when Kevin Sullivan enters the ring, because the first, your first thought is why is he here? You know, and then you put the pieces together, and it's one of those situations where your mind can't put the pieces together fast enough to enjoy the moment. There's nothing you can do but react in that kind of situation.
Right. Well, and we had seen, you know, the videos that had led up to it, and you know, in the videos you could see the shadow, but to have him show up live on the pay-per-view, I mean, and like you said, I mean, he was the evil to whichever good guy there was, from Dusty Rhodes to Hulk Hogan to Cactus Jack to, you know, it, just name your favorite good guy. Kevin Sullivan was the one that would just make you just cringe. And so to see him show up in the ring and then put that spike into Steve's head, it was kind of one of those, you when he showed up in the ring, you had a notion, you know, even though, you know, Steve Carino had talked about, you know, tributing the father and everything, you had a notion that Sullivan would do something dastardly like that. But, you know, again, what an incredible match. And it looks like it's not over, as I believe you and Kevin probably both realized that after that match, after you caught your breath, you both realized this feud is far from over.
Yeah, you know, BJ, I think, unlocked something in Steve that we haven't seen for a very long time. And you mentioned the father. So that, you know, that's in reference, of course, to the Kevin Sullivan being sort of the father of evil. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was passed down to him from King Curtis Iaukea, who, you know, a lot of longtime fans know as well. And then, you know, there's reference to the uncle, which is, you know, Purple Haze, Mark Lewin. And there's just this weird bond, this familial bond between these, you know, these guys, this evil that links them. And it's almost familial, but not in the sense of a family that sits down for Thanksgiving dinner. This is something
not that, even close.
No, this is something that runs a lot deeper. And if we give Steve some time to recoup and kind of regenerate, I'd be curious to see, you know, where this is going. We've not seen the last of Steve Carino and BJ Whitmer by a long shot.
I think you're right. Let's talk about the rest of the card. And a couple of highlights. First of all, Jay Lethal. I don't know if there is any more words to fully encapsulate what he has accomplished in a year plus as the world champion. You know, this latest defeat with Jay Briscoe, you thought for sure Jay Briscoe was going to find a way to, you know, become the first three-time world champion in Ring of Honor history. But no, Jay Lethal found a way to get through the match, get the pin. You could tell they both respected each other greatly after the match. Let's talk for a second about, you know, the next logical contender for Jay Lethal in that Ring of Honor world title. We've heard Colt Cabana maybe getting another shot. You've got to imagine that Mark Briscoe may want a shot. Give us a couple other names that we may be looking for in the weeks and months to come in Ring of Honor.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned Jay Lethal. There's not much more that can be said, but here's a guy who's defeated guys like Jay Briscoe, AJ Styles. He's gone across the pond. He's defended the championship in three different continents in, you know, in the span of a month at one point. You know, he went over to England, defended against their best over there at Honor Rising. You know, he defended the championship over in Japan, defeated Michael Elgin at Wrestle Kingdom back in January. So he's a guy that's lined them all up and defeated them all. And it's interesting now because, you know, with Bullet Club coming in, I think his focus, you know, has changed a bit, especially with Truth Martini not around. I think his focus is a little more genuine. You know, we're seeing an even different wrinkle to Jay Lethal, where he might be sensing that you know, this Bullet Club is bigger than Ring of Honor. So mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, his importance, so his personal spot, you know, is not nearly as important as the health, so to speak, of Ring of Honor. And that leads me to the first logical contender that I see is a guy named Adam Cole. And Adam Cole, of course, former ROH world champion, had one of the, you know, surprisingly most competitive reigns in recent history, because if you remember, he was a guy who a lot of folks thought, well, he's gonna get the championship, not defend it, and, you know, kind of pick and choose his matches. Well, he proved he was a fighting champion. Now that he's with Bullet Club, he's got this extra kind of gusto, and, you know, he's got this extra bluster where he feels invincible. And we found out at the TV tapings in Toronto that he feels that he's the true number one contender to the ROH World Championship. Who he's beaten to establish that? Well, that's a matter of, you know, that's something that hasn't quite been decided. Although I will say, you know, very impressive win against Kamitachi. Very, very impressive match. You should go out of your way to see him versus Leo Rush from, I believe it was Columbus. And so he's a guy that I think, you know, he wants to be the number one contender. Whether or not he'll get the championship shot, you know, that remains to be seen. We do have Colt Cabana coming up one-on-one, Jay Lethal, Colt Cabana, the rematch in Philadelphia, which I think a lot of people are sleeping on. Colt Cabana, I know, has been training for that one, preparing night and day. And then, you know, there are some, you know, there's some wild cards in the history of Ring of Honor. There's been a couple of guys to come out of the blue that just captured the Ring of Honor championship kind of unexpectedly. Guys like James Gibson, you know, mm-hmm. guys like, you know, Eddie Edwards, Davey Richards, who initially, you know, you see them on the defense list, and you, at first you think, well, you know, maybe he doesn't have what it takes to be champion. And then suddenly 22 minutes later, you're standing there with, you know, kind of a shocking champion. I could see that happening with a guy like Donovan Dijak, who's still very much, you know, has that laser focus for the ROH World Championship. I could see a guy like Leo Rush, you know, I thought he was going to do it in Dallas. I was
there for that match. That was for a kid that just won the top prospect tournament. He gave Jay Lethal everything and more. I mean, he took Jay Lethal to the limits, and it was an incredible display by this young prospect that has quickly made a name for himself in Ring of Honor.
And that's the crazy part. So I met him about 6 months ago, and he had less than a year of experience, legitimate less than 1 year experience in professional wrestling. I attend all the tryout seminars and camps with Ring of Honor. We have one coming up this weekend. I've never seen anybody captivate the trainers and decision makers at Ring of Honor quite like Leo Rush did first time he stepped into the ring. There are certain guys. There's guys like Leo Rush, Donovan Dijak, another one, obviously. And, you know, a guy like Jay White, who when they step in the ring, they look comfortable. They look like they've been there before. And you don't even need to know their age or experience level. You know they're a threat. You know that they're in great shape, great conditioning. And then they let their work in the ring do the talking for them. It's a guy like Leo Rush that I think the only difference between him winning and losing that ROH World Championship was experience. If he had 2-3 years more experience, I think he could have easily walked away the champion. But, you know, with guys like that, I could see, you know, Adam Cole says he's at the top of the pecking order. Colt's going to get his shot. Kyle O'Reilly had an opportunity at the recent television taping in Concord. And, you know, that'll be seen on Ring of Honor television. So, you know, that won't spoil that. But, you know, there are a number of folks that have their eyes locked on it. And, you know, I could see it going any number of different directions. But the question to me is, who's going to beat Lethal? You know, I just see him. He's the best in the world right now.
He is. You know, we always play, you know, little fun trivias with, you know, I will say this. There was at one point, I believe it was in October of last year, when if you take the big three, and when I say big three, of course, I mean WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA. There was one time when he was the only world champion on the books, and he has defended it, like you said. He's defended it everywhere, Japan, you know, North America, you name it, Europe. he is, you know, he is, a, you know, for all of his bravado and all of his everything that he talks about, he truly, you know, he has truly put himself as best in the world, and he goes out to prove it every time he steps in the ring wearing that belt. We're talking with Ian Riccoboni from Ring of Honor. Let's talk for a second about tag teams, because I've said before, and I've gotten, I'm lucky enough being in Austin. I'm lucky enough to know Ray Rowe, one half of War Machine, does a lot of work with promotion down here. And I've told him numerous times, and, you know, especially when he and Hansen were the tag team champions, Ring of Honor is doing tag team wrestling the way I remember growing up watching Jim Crockett Promotions or Mid-South. You know, it's being done right. It's got the deepest roster of any promotion in the world. Right now, the Addiction, by hook or by crook, are still the Ring of Honor tag team champs. Let's talk first. Let's project out a little bit. I know War Machine is chomping at the bit. Believe me, I saw Ray Rowe about 3 weeks ago at a show here in Austin. And you could tell he's got a little more of an edge since losing the tag titles. And I know that Hansen felt the same way. But let's talk for a second about the other contenders. You've got the Briscoes, who just won the IWGP Tag Team Championships. The Young Bucks, of course, they're the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions. Give us a couple other teams. I mean, and as I said, it seems like every time you turn around, there's another tag team added to the Ring of Honor roster.
Yeah, and just as you mentioned that was going to be my first go-to. You know, there was a team that cost War Machine the tag team championships in the no disqualification rematch in Columbus. That was up until Carino Whitmer was the most violent match I've ever called, and that's Shane Taylor and Keith Lee. You know, I know down in Texas they're known as the Pretty Boy Killers.
Yes.
And they just the biggest, largest tag team in Ring of Honor history, bar none. You know, I say it every time. You know, I was called that event with Veda Scott, and I said, Veda, they were announced at 650 pounds. How is that possible when Shane Taylor himself is – I mean, that would put Keith Lee at 250, and, you know, I'm almost 250, so I know that's not true.
I can tell you for a fact, I've stood next to both of them. Shane Taylor is the current heavyweight champion for Pro Wrestling Texas down here in the Austin area, and Shane and Keith – I mean, Keith is a former defensive lineman for Texas A&M, which so far is the only knock against him, being a proud Longhorn, to having to talk to an Aggie like that. But the crazy thing is, as huge as they are, and they are large, 650 is being really nice.
Yeah.
But to be as large as they are, for moves that they make, I have seen Keith Lee make moves that cruiserweights have problems with.
Yeah, he does a Topkan Hilo, which is the no hands over the top rope, kind of 180 front to back, front over back dive. And that's a 300-plus-pound man coming at you full force. I ride a lot with Tough Tim Hughes, and I had to essentially hold him up on the way home from Kalamazoo, Michigan after I'm sorry, Nashville after he landed that. So you know, I've been in places where I've seen that happen. I'm not sure what their beef is with War Machine, but I'm sure we haven't seen the last of it. I know there's some Texas pride happening. I know that Ray Rowe has actually helped train Shane Taylor, and I know that he's helped that train Keith Lee. So, you know, I think there'll be some more meat there. But then, you know, tag teams, the Motor City Machine Guns, they were a tag team that, you know, if you watch the pay-per-view, they were on the precipice of winning the ROH World Tag Team Championships for the first time. It's pretty much the only tag team championship they haven't held across the world.
Sure.
And, you know, it came down to Kamitachi coming down and him and Jay White locking it up and distracting the ref. And once again, Christopher Daniels, the ring veteran, using that to his advantage. So, you know, they could very easily become the ROH World Tag Team Champions. You have All Night Express, who now is Caprice Coleman with them as the Minister of Information. You have, you know, guys like Will Ferreira, who's, you know, he's kind of cycling through partners to find a great fit. He'll be teamed with Cheeseburger and a little bit of an interesting combination. But, you know, I point out my favorite team right now is Silas Young and Beer City Bruiser. They have almost a brother-like connection. and they stick out to me because Silas Young is deceptively fast and explosive, as is Beer City Bruiser, another one of those giant men. And they have really great chemistry in the ring, and they won tag wars this year. You know, so they'll have a shot at the ROH World Tag Team Championships on television coming up. And they're a team that I think could surprise a lot of people. And so they're actually my favorite coming up, you know, to really make a big splash in Ring of Honor.
I you know, it's so much fun to try to keep up with the tag team scene in Ring of Honor. And yeah, I could easily see the Addiction holding on to those belts for a long while because they'll do it by hook or by crook. But at the same time, you just mentioned three other teams right there, and there's going to be more. I mean, as you mentioned,
absolutely.
Taylor and Lee are you know, they're going to be chomping at the bit. You've got teams like, you know, some of the teams that are coming out of New Japan. I could easily see one of those, whether it's, say, you know, Chaos or you know, just you name your team. And yeah, but it's so much fun to watch.
RPG Vice. How can we forget Red Dragon? You know, there's two more that on any given day would just walk in and win the ROH World Tag Team Championship.
Well, and that's a good segue, because I mean, Red Dragon, they've kind of been on the individual pursuits. Of course, Bobby Fish, current Ring of Honor television champion. Kyle O'Reilly, like you mentioned, is in the mix for the world title. But you got to imagine they're going to start to get that itch and seeing these teams that are you know, trying to get the tag titles. You know, they want to become tag champs again. So you got to imagine probably won't be long before they team up again and start pursuing the Addiction or whoever's wearing the belts at the time. So, of course, look out for Red Dragon.
Absolutely.
As we start to wrap up here, Ian Riccoboni with Ring of Honor Wrestling, you mentioned that you do the play-by-play for Women of Honor. And tell us a little bit about, give us a couple of contenders. And let me ask you this. And you know, has there been talk of Ring of Honor, you know, creating a women's championship?
Sure. You know, I think, you know, as we move forward, as it's become, you know, such a big thing, you know, it's become something where the fans are demanding, you know, not only a championship, but they're demanding more content. So we did, you know, to put things in perspective, last year, you know, we filmed 4 Women of Honor matches. And, you know, I think by the end of this year, we're on target to, you know, release just about one every other week, if not more, you know, 30 or more, plus the TV special, plus the special that's coming up this Friday from Baltimore. So it's because of fan support and the fans letting Ring of Honor know that Women of Honor is something that they want to see. You know, I've been an advocate for the Women of Honor Championship. I've heard whispers. I haven't heard anything concrete or nothing confirmable, but it certainly would be something that's fitting, you know, because we have, you know, not only our homegrown stars like Mandy Leone, like Kelly Klein, who's just undefeated, dominant. She reminds me so much of Mike Tyson mixed with Ronda Rousey. There's, you know, in addition to those folks and Hanaya, and then, you know, we're bringing in stars from across America, like Crazy Mary Dobson, like Solo Darling, and international stars now too, like Candice LeRae, who's making her debut on Friday against Kelly Klein. And, you know, those are just incredible matches. And, you know, add to that stars like Taylor Hendricks and Amber Gallows, who you mentioned earlier. My breakout pick is actually somebody you saw down in Dallas. I think Deonna Purrazzo is the most gifted athlete I've ever seen. And she is very, very young and very advanced for how young she is in the ring. I think Deonna Purrazzo is the name to watch as kind of the dark horse that could end up taking the entire Women of Honor division over, you know, if I had to choose somebody like that. But, you know, I think it's Kelly Klein's division until someone proves it otherwise at this point.
That's good to know. Ian Riccoboni, Ring of Honor, their next pay-per-view comes up August 19th, which is my birthday. So that'll be that'll be a good way to celebrate the birthday. Watching Death Before Dishonor 14. You've got stars already lined up. The World TV Champion Bobby Fish, of course. You mentioned Michael Elgin, the current IWGP Intercontinental Champion, as well as the Tag Team Champions, the Briscoes, Toriano, the Briscoes, Toriano, former Never Openweight 6-Man Champions, Of course, absolutely. Adam Cole mentioned Donovan Dijak. By the way, there was a match. I saw the video of this. Donovan Dijak and Keith Lee. This
was
in Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've had the opportunity to meet Donovan, great guy. And, of course, like I said, I know Keith Lee. To see those two in the ring, that was a piece of art. It was absolutely a piece of art. And, you know, kudos to both those guys. But that'll be Friday, August 19th, live on pay-per-view from Las Vegas at Sam's Town. You can catch it on pay-per-view. Starts at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central on your favorite pay-per-view provider. Ian, it's great to talk to you, my friend. We got to do this more often. I want, you know, like I said, Ring of Honor, we see it in Austin here every Saturday night. And we're lucky enough to have guys like Ray Rowe and ACH, who I believe is now in Japan. Am I correct?
Well, he's actually headed down to Mexico very, very soon.
Oh, okay, Mexico.
Or I'm sorry, he'll be in Japan. I'm sorry.
Okay.
He is in Japan. Yeah.
Last time I saw him, he was getting ready for the Best in the World pay-per-view and then TV taping. And then he was going to do the
Super J
Cup.
Yeah, right. He's in the Noah Junior Tag Cup. Yep.
Junior Tag Cup, and, that's right. That's right.
And he drew a heck of a partner. I got to think they're the favorites to win the whole thing. So, you know, he's a guy, you know, Leo Rush has just been down in Mexico as well. You know, we have the, you know, at Ring of Honor, we're very fortunate. We have relationships with New Japan, with CMLL, you know, to give our guys, you know, incredible experience worldwide and to bring in some of the top talent from around the world. You mentioned, you know, the list goes on and on. Okada, Tanahashi, they're coming back on the 19th as well. So
right. It's
going to be a great night. Yeah.
Should be phenomenal. And like I said, kudos to Ring of Honor for opening their doors to these other promotions and giving wrestling fans such a wide and varied product. And it is so good to watch. By the way, next time you see ACH, tell him to sing John Denver, Thank God I'm a Country Boy. Only because, and I'll have to send the clip to you one of these days. We had him on. We're doing a live broadcast for a wrestling show down here, and we had ACH on, and that's the that piece is the beginning of the entrance music for one of the wrestlers here, and ACH started singing it on the air, and it was the funniest thing, not only to hear it but to watch him sing it. It was kind of surreal. So you'll have to ask him about that, Ian Riccaboni. Thank you so much. Hope you stay cool in Philly and give our best to everybody there in Ring of Honor. And let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. It sounds great. Thanks for having me, Stu.
Thank you. As we wrap up here on this week's edition of Sports Guys Talking Wrestling, we just finished watching the Cruiserweight Classic Bracketology special on the WWE Network. As I joked with Dave LaGreca, I was half expecting to see Joe Lunardi from ESPN show up on this thing because they have really framed this in a sports context, which, and I've said it before, and I said this with the introduction of Mauro Ranallo and his expertise into the sound of WWE. It's good to have some sports in your sports entertainment. And so they've revealed the bracket. And this bracket, again, 32 of the best cruiserweights that come from every corner of the globe. A couple of the more intriguing matchups. Zack Sabre Jr. will start out against Tyson Dux. That should be a fun match. We have talked before about our guy, Weezy Woo, Kenneth Johnson. He will open up his Cruiserweight Classic run against Akira Tozawa. That's going to be a tough challenge for Weezy. Tozawa is an accomplished wrestler from Japan, but Weezy Woo, he's got a few tricks up his sleeve. I think he will have a good showing in that match, and of course we wish all the best to the Pro Wrestling Texas, Inspire Pro Wrestling, RCW. I mean, he is a star here in the Central and South Texas area. Our guy Weezy Woo. Tajiri, the Japanese buzzsaw, the ECW icon, the former WWE Cruiserweight champion, he will open up against Damian Slater, guy from Australia. That'll be a fun one. One of the most intriguing matchups involves tag team partners. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. I got to see Tommaso Ciampa several weeks ago in Dallas at VIP Wrestling in the four-way match. Had an incredible showing, just an incredible talent. The both of them have been a tag team on NXT recently. They were in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. They have been appearing a lot on NXT, had some incredible matches, but now they get to face each other, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. These two guys that are two of the best products out of Evolve that you will see. A couple others. Kota Ibushi, the accomplished from New Japan. He also wrestled in Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. In fact, Mauro Ranallo referenced Pro Wrestling Noah and New Japan Pro Wrestling all in the same sentence, talking about Kota Ibushi, a former IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. He will face in his first round Sean Maluda. Cedric Alexander, the former Ring of Honor star, will take on Clément Petiot. I hope I said that right. That should be a fun one. And we mentioned Tajiri, a veteran that's coming back into this tournament. Another veteran, Brian Kendrick, a former WWE Tag Team Champion with Paul London. In fact, they still hold the record for the longest run as Tag Team Champions in the WWE. New Day's getting close there, but Brian Kendrick, Paul London are at the top of that list. Brian Kendrick, 37 years old. He's getting another shot at glory. He will be facing Raul Mendoza in the opening round of the Cruiserweight Classic. It was a great show, and to hear from some of these guys, we heard from TJ Perkins, heard his story. What a great story, and what a great guy to see on this stage, all these guys. And then, of course, hearing from Triple H, talk about what it was like to scout these talents out and to bring them together in the performance center. And he talked about being invigorated when he was down there talking to these 32 competitors. It's going to be a lot of fun. It starts next Wednesday night, the 13th of July, on the WWE Network, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, will be the first series of matches in the Cruiserweight Classic Tournament. This tournament will end in September on the WWE Network. So that'll be exciting. We say every week on Sports Guys Talking Wrestling, wherever you are, whether you're in Austin, you're in San Antonio, somewhere across Texas, across the country, or around the world, go watch independent wrestling. Point made right here. These 32 guys that are going to be competing on the WWE Network in the Cruiserweight Classic compete in independent promotions all over the world. And so go see these independent wrestling shows. Great talent, great action in the ring, affordable entertainment. You get access to them that you wouldn't get anywhere else. Couple of the cards that are coming up on Friday. River City Wrestling, RCW, will be at the Turner Club in San Antonio Friday night. The main event of that great card, Brandon Groom, the Brideless One, he has got a challenge. And boy, is it a challenge, as he will be facing the King of the Mountain. And no, I'm not talking about Eli Drake. I'm talking about the original King of the Mountain, the man that founded TNA Wrestling, the former WWE Intercontinental Champion, former WWE Tag Team Champion, former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, U.S. Champion. That's right, Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett is coming to San Antonio with his wife, Karen. Jeff Jarrett, Brandon Groom, will be facing off in an RCW versus Global Force Wrestling match there on top of a great card. That'll be at the Turner Club in San Antonio. You can get your tickets. Look up River City Wrestling on Facebook and Twitter. If you're in the Metroplex, VIP Wrestling, our friends up there are putting on VIPX, and yes, that's exactly what it means. This is to the extreme. And if you don't believe me, look at one of the matches that's going to be on this card. Action Jackson, who has been a stalwart legend on the Texas wrestling scene. I remember him way back in the mid to late 90s wrestling in the smaller promotions in and around Texas. Well, he gets to face New Jack. Yes, that New Jack from ECW. A man that has absolutely no regard for his own body, much less anybody else's. I hope they have bandages and everything. I know they will, but that is going to be a hellacious match. A couple of the other matches that night. Chris Hero will be facing Shane Taylor. By the way, still the current Pro Wrestling Texas Heavyweight Champion, Shane Taylor. Lance Hoyt, one half of Killer Elite Squad, making the journey from Japan, coming back to his home state of Texas, and he gets to face the Limitless One, Keith Lee. Keith Lee's going to try to see if Lance wants to bask in his glory. They're also doing a movie taping. They did this movie filming when I was there for their last show. They're going to tape another scene, and this time the match involves Tyrus, the TNA star, formerly known as Brodus Clay in the WWE. So if you're in Dallas-Fort Worth Friday night, check them out. They're at the Rail Club in Fort Worth, VIPX. You can check out VIP Wrestling on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere for more information about that. And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of Sports Guys Talking Wrestling. You can find us on Facebook at Sports Guys Talking Wrestling. Find us on Twitter at SGTWATX. By the way, you can find me on Twitter at Stu Myrick. That's Stewmyrick. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. And if you subscribe to us on iTunes, make sure you rate and review us. Let us know that you're enjoying the show. If there's something you want to hear on a future episode, let us know. We will do our very best to make sure that happens. And as always, we are proud to be part of the exclusively online content available from 104.9 The Horn, the flagship sports station for Texas athletics here in Austin. You can find us under the podcast tab at hornfm.com. By the way, UFC 200 this weekend. Shout out to my boys Jordan and Eddie from Fight Night ATX, the official MMA podcast for 104.9 The Horn. You can find them at hornfm.com under the podcast tab. Right next to us, the official pro wrestling podcast for The Horn. My thanks once again to Dave LaGreca from Busted Open Radio. You can find them Sirius XM, Rush, Channel 93, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 to 3 p.m. Central. Also, my thanks to Ian Riccoboni from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Catch him with his Women of Honor wrestling shows on YouTube and catch him on Ring of Honor Television. And my thanks to you for joining us, for giving us a little part of your busy day. I'm Stu Myrick. We hope that someday you get an extraordinary xylophone, and we hope to see you at the matches.
Delightful! It's an extraordinary xylophone.
Gracias.